Next up is new music from Adeline Hotel. The record is Whodunit, and the name of the track is Joy.
I don't wanna leave, but it's so enticing. Plugged another page and unfold like lightning. I don't wanna be that sure.
This next track is Aruj Aftab featuring More Mother. The track is called Bolo Na.
Bolo.
wash my own feet at my own shrine. Damn.
Papa never worked a day in his life.
And Mama, some bad talk going around town saying that Papa had 3 outside children and another wife. And that ain't right.
Heard some talk about Papa doing some storefront preaching, talking about saving souls and all the time leeching. Dealing in debt and stealing in the name of the Lord. Mama just hold her head and say,
with a bit of an apology.
Oh my God, were we not?
Well, I don't know where we were.
We were.
I don't know.
Oh my goodness. Oh no.
All right.
Sorry. Okay. More technical difficulties.
More technical difficulties.
This is 90.7 FM.
WGXC
Acra.
90.7 on your FM dial. All right.
Welcome
so,
to the Capital District's DSA Good Time Hour.
That's
I'm
right.
I'm Casey. That's Bill.
And this is the 1-year anniversary of the show. And it's also the 18th day of Fructidor in the year 232 in the French Republican calendar. Okay, we're going to start off the show with an apology. Tonight's show, being so close to Labor Day, Casey and I are trying to devote it to all things labor.
We are also need another apology for the technical difficulties, both not our fault and our fault.
Yeah, both
now.
Of them, both of them. We're not used to, we have two studios to figure out the way things work here, and so we had to make a quick change. But anyway, I have to apologize for the intro song. Has absolutely nothing to do with labor. It just happens to open up. It was the 3rd of September, so I apologize for that shameless impertinence. But, Casey, as you might guess, impertinence is one of my very favorite of vices. Anyway, Papa Was a Rolling Stone is a terrific song from the Temptations' 1972 album, Psychedelic Soul.
Rock on, brother.
Thank you.
In addition to Pochnoir's apology, here is the show's standard disclaimer. The remarks made tonight reflect the opinions of whomever may be speaking them, not those of WGXC or of the Capital District DSA. Pochnoir and I, and whoever may be our guests tonight, this is Aaron, are just members of Capital District DSA. There's no set political line to be towed by members of the DSA, and membership is welcome to all.
That's right. To be a DSA member, you do not have to be a strict Marxist, as am I. Did you like that, Aaron?
What is that sound?
Okay,
it's a
that's
whip
a
crack.
Whip crack. There's one other thing, Casey, that I'd like to bring up. It is getting close to WGXC's fund drive, and I recently learned from getting a little bit of an in-service on the technology here, which I obviously did not stick, that only 40% of the programmers on WGXC are regular monthly financial supporters of WGXC. Isn't that astonishing?
Shocking.
Isn't it shameful that
Wait,
when...
I? No, I am. I am. I am.
You are.
I am. Okay.
We both are.
Yeah.
Isn't that shameful that when on wayfarm.org you can give as little as $5 a month, and therefore some are making use of WGXC setup, and they use it like a parasite. As a socialist and as a strict... Hold it. Where's the little cursor? As a strict...
Yeah.
Marxist, who thinks that it's only good manners to pay workers for the true value of their labor, I find that some, that kind of conduct to be both indecorous and somewhat boorish.
Guilt trip, guilt trip, guilt trip.
Casey, what do you think about that?
I don't know what to think right now, Bill. Gotta be honest with you. There's a lot going on.
Yes.
No, I agree. The drive is coming up, so mm-hmm. keep your ears open for that.
Last year's drive happened on Columbus Day.
Indigenous Peoples Day.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's true.
Okay, boomer. So let's just dive right into our interview.
Okay.
With Aaron here, and I don't know how to say your last name. I don't even know if you want your last name on the air. That's
you can.
That's on you.
And you can have an alias if you like.
You can have an alias. Well, I've already said his first name.
But my friends call me. My friends call me Yuri Ryatov.
Okay.
Yeah, but
wow.
Yeah.
So we're here with Yuri Ryatov.
Okay.
But you can call me Aaron Petkoff.
Okay.
Okay. So let's begin this with a rather disingenuous rhetorical question. What is the deal with socialists being all about labor? What is that? What is the deal with that? Why are socialists such a way about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a little bit unrehearsed in this kind of in this question, partly just because I've been involved in the labor movement my whole adult life, but you know, it's been especially my primary focus for, you know, the last 8 years or so, especially. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Sean Fain, he's the president of the United Auto Workers Union. At this year's Labor Notes conference, he gave the keynote, the closing speech at the end of the conference, which was incredible. And there he referred to the working class as the arsenal of democracy.
Wait, you went to that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good.
yeah, me and I think something like 4,000 other people. It's enormous. It's too big for the it's too big for the hotel.
What hotel was it at?
It's at the Hyatt.
Okay. I'm assuming it was a Union hotel.
Naturally.
Okay. No, not so naturally sometimes.
Well, for labor notes, it's natural.
There you go.
But yeah, there during Sean Fain's keynote address, you know, he called the working class the arsenal of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of speaks to why the working class is central to socialists. To socialists now, you know, not all socialists. You know, there have been a lot of different kind of trends of socialism over history. You had, you know, you had people who wanted to set up, you know, communitarian, like utopian societies, like, you know, kind of.
Like communes and such like that?
Yeah. Like.
Me no likey.
Yeah. Like giant cooperative sort of villages and stuff.
You know
like
why
that.
I don't like those things?
Don't you quote the French Republican calendar every month on this? Isn't that part of the French commune?
Well, the after the French Revolution, after the French Revolution, they had a new calendar. You know, it's a little bit of an excess.
My bad.
All right. Okay.
Fascinating stuff.
And
France is complicated.
France is so complicated. France is complicated. I tried to learn about it. It was above my pay grade. I tell you what.
For me, communes, they don't confront capitalism. They try to find a little sequestration of themselves. Well, capitalism. That's why I'm not big on those things.
Yeah.
You know, and especially like working class issues. Every time you have a labor action, no matter what it is, whether it be a strike, whether it be call in sick, whether it be a slowdown at work, that always by nature, to my mind at least, confronts capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
You can have other types of, let's say, cultural opposition. You can have marches for, let's say, all kinds of identity politics, but they may not confront capitalism.
That's why I don't like hippies.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Also, there's a very real hippie to Republican pipeline that is occurring, or had occurred.
Oh, absolutely.
Rather. But my biggest beef is like, what are you guys doing? Come on.
Mm-hmm. But all of those hippies, they like leave the city. And then they go up to places like Catskill and they get their property. And then what happens? Don't raise my taxes.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that I did do that, but that won't be me in, you know, anytime soon.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
But you can't start wearing tie-dye either. That's
Forget about it.
Yes, that can't happen.
I have worn tie-dye before, but I did grow up here. So.
All right. Should we maybe have a little musical break?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much time we've lost about 20 minutes of today.
Well, the show it's 7:27, so the show is halfway over, and but this is a terrific song, of course, a Disney song, all about making work a little more endurable. You ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hold it.
You see, in every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun, and snap, the job's a game. And every task you undertake becomes a piece of cake, a lark, a spree. It's very clear to see that a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way. A robin feathering his nest has very little time to rest while gathering his bits of twine and twig. Though quite intent in his pursuit, he has a merry tune to toot. He knows a song will move the job along.
Oh,
down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way. The nectar from the flowers to the comb never tire of ever buzzing to and fro, because they take a little nip from every flower that they sip, and hence they find their task is not a grind.
All right, we are back from Julie Andrews with that. Wow, that was a killer note. What a terrific voice. All right. What more pertinently. So, Aaron, I understand that part of your history of organizing is organizing the people at the New Yorker magazine.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose back in 2016, I worked at the New Yorker for a little bit. The day I was going to put in my 2 weeks, after about 6 months there, I was about to put in my 2 weeks, just because the job wasn't what I really expected it to be. But and that day, I was getting ready to go to my manager and tell her, like, hey, I got 2 weeks left and I'm out. And then someone came up to me on the elevator and was like, hey, Aaron, I read this article that you wrote for Jacobin about labor organizing and about Saul Alinsky. We should get a coffee and talk more about that. And I thought to myself, oh shoot, they're going to start a union. Now I have to stick around. And so after about 6 months, I was going to put my 2 weeks in, then I ended up working there for another 2 years after that and was part of the organizing committee of the union at the New Yorker. Prior to that, I'd always been very focused on labor organizing as kind of my, as a central focus of my practice as a socialist. But that was the first time that I had really been, deeply, directly involved, central to a labor organizing campaign. Before that, I had, I was an intern for Teamsters for Democratic Union. I had salted with Unite Here at the Detroit Metro Airport, which is where I'm from.
Have you always been, is your primary career in organizing in labor unions?
Oh, no, yeah. I'm a software engineer.
Oh, my God.
For work.
How cool. Yeah. What a bad butt. Sorry, Bill's getting texts. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Are we not allowed to swear on the...
No, you
cannot swear. Oh, and you cannot, just to remind you, that you cannot tell anybody to do anything. You have to maybe suggest, let's say, you may, if you like what you're hearing, you might consider joining the Democratic Socialists of America, blah, blah, blah. But you can't tell somebody, you ought to join the Democratic Socialists of America.
You're literally doing that on air.
So I couldn't say, like, you should join a union or you should go to the emergency workers organizing committee website.
We're literally doing that right now live, so we should not.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Good to know. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, before that I had always been really focused on labor organizing, but I was never directly, you know, essentially part of kind of organizing a campaign. But, you know, for me that was the most rewarding experience of, you know, my entire life as a socialist, being able to be, you know, directly centrally involved in organizing a union at my workplace. And I think one of the things that really kind of speaks to why socialists focus on the working class in particular as the sort of the central pillar of progressive social change. I suppose like one, you know, one kind of anecdote from that experience really stands out to me, where I had a coworker who, you know, who knew I was a socialist, and he asked me at a union happy hour, you know, about that, and you know, about why I'm a socialist, being a socialist, and I'd asked him, like, you know, well, why are you asking? Like, what do you, you know, are you considering it? And he said to me, you know, that he had always been politically involved. He was the, you know, he was in the leadership of the College Democrats, where he went to school. He had always, like, done canvassing for Democratic campaigns and all these things, but that his experience being involved in organizing the union was the first time that he had ever felt like he was really putting his politics into practice himself directly without looking to someone else to make them happen.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's kind of the, you know, that really just really brought home to me the whole idea that kind of, to me, the central kind of ethos of socialist politics, which is that the working class is central, that without the working class, you know, you can advocate, you can mobilize, you can petition, you can do all these things, but you don't have power. And that's what really, you know, that really has stuck with me, that experience and that conversation. And that's kind of the point, is that, you know, the working class is the vast majority of society, and that the labor movement that organizes the working class organizes this vast majority across all these different differences on the basis of the hinge that power is structured around in a capitalist society, which is how do things get produced? You know, for socialists, there are you know, there are basically two major divides, right, in a capitalist society that center around how things get produced in society, which is, you know, on the one side you have the people who control how things get produced, and on the other side you have the people who do the producing. And this is the capitalists who, you know, control how things get produced because they generally they own, you know, the things that are used to do the producing. And on the other side, you have people who do the actual work, and who do that work because they rely on a wage to pay for rent, to pay for their food, to pay for anything that they need to have a decent quality of life in society. And that relationship always has a way of producing antagonism, of producing something that can be organized around. And when you have like a weak labor movement, right, where maybe you don't have a lot of strikes or a lot of people aren't involved in unions, that doesn't mean that people stop being, that antagonism goes away. It just means it gets expressed in a very unorganized way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I've been doing a lot of research and writing around, you know, it's a bit embarrassing to ever say that you want to do a podcast, but I've been working on wanting to do, I want to do a history podcast on the history of Detroit auto workers.
I would listen.
I would listen too.
Big podcast person. That's my bread and butter. History podcasts.
Oh baby. Well, you know, inshallah, I'll be able to do this someday.
This is a safe space. We have a radio show.
That's right.
Yeah. If there's ever a space where I felt like I could say that I want to do a history podcast, this really feels like.
Oh, especially if it deals with the Detroit auto workers. Yeah. Hey.
And in the, you know, in the period before the UAW was organized, you know, there were, you know, people were still very, you know, even without a union, people were still very angry. They were just expressing it in an unorganized way where they just wouldn't show up to work.
Well, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned Detroit auto. I mean, you're from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
My step grandpa, my grandmother remarried, and he has since passed, but he was a Detroit auto worker for a long time. The most racist man I have ever met in my life, though. And, like, it stemmed from, like, the working conditions, and it's, like, I would love to know him now and try to, like, speak to him now as an adult with, like, a better mm-hmm. understanding of the world, because at the time I was just like, shut up, Grandpa. But, like, I think all of his anger was very obviously misdirected towards black people in the 60s. You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he also sucked, but...
There's a really great movie that kind of speaks to this history, because it is complicated, because the UAW on the, you know, I mean, sure, I mean, I'm definitely no stranger to that sort of reality of, I mean, I have people in my family that are auto workers that are exactly how you're describing.
Yeah.
You know, but the UAW itself, too, was central to advocating for civil rights. The UAW played an enormous role in making sure that that the auto plants were integrated, that, you know, one thing, I haven't actually really dug into the history, but I've seen a lot of references to this, that the UAW actually played a really big role in making bowling kind of the standard American sort of middle-class blue-collar pastime, because they wanted...
How terrible.
These... Hey, buddy. As a proud Midwesterner,
yeah.
I won't stand for anyone bad mouthing bowling.
But you have to change your shoes.
This is true. Yeah,
yeah. That's part of the deal.
Mm.
You got to change your shoes for most sports.
We all have crosses.
Yeah, but to some stranger shoes.
Well, you don't have. They don't have to be strangers. They could be friends.
I
or
guess
you
I could
buy your own.
I could buy my own bowling
or comrades
shoes.
Or fellow
or
workers.
Comrades.
All right,
exactly.
All right, I stand correct.
One of the things that the UAW did too was as they were kind of so they organized these bowling leagues as a way of just, you know, helping to build sort of camaraderie and fellowship amongst their members.
That's so smart.
And they would boycott bowling alleys that wouldn't allow black people to play. That wouldn't allow integrated bowling leagues.
Yeah.
They would boycott them and say, fine, if you don't want the business of, you know, the 350,000 member union, that's on you. Wow. Yeah.
It's interesting. I would love to, like, pick your brain outside of this interview, because mm-hmm. I recently ran...
Good, let's go for drinks afterwards.
Well, it's a Tuesday. But I recently ran into a couple people that I went to high school with, and they're unionized. Like, they're, one is in the welders union, one is an electrician, a couple are teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all, like, incredibly right-wing, like, based on only their social media presence. Like, we didn't get into that. And I feel like there's two very distinct pools of, like, people I meet in unions, where either they're, like, super, like, leftist pro-union, pro-organizing, or, like, They seem to really love the union. They love the protections that unions have, like, given them, and, like, the pay rate and, you know, healthcare, blah, blah, blah. But they are voting for, like, the complete opposite. And I'm just, like, I wonder, like, what those talking points would be, or, like I guess what your take on that is. I don't know if you run into that a lot in your organizing.
Sure. I mean, I suppose, yeah, of course.
And
I mean,
this is a very blanket statement, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's the... It's the tough thing, and it's sort of, I think what you're speaking to is also one of the reasons why especially for, like, it's less frequent now, but on the left, it you know, for the past, like, 40 years, it hasn't been uncommon to come across people who, you know, who are on the left and who say, you know, this whole thing about the working class is, you know, this is an old idea.
Mm-hmm.
This is an idea from... you know, sure, once upon a time the unions were, you know, were really, really important, but now look at what the unions do. They don't represent the workers. Workers and workers turn against them, and, you know, it doesn't do anything to help, like, advance progressive change. How could you say that it does? Because you know, look at all these union members who vote against their interests, or, you know, look at the Teamsters when they endorsed Ronald Reagan, or now the president, Sean O'Brien of the Teamsters, you know, is speaking at the RNC and, telling everyone, Vance. And,
but he kept his shirt on. He didn't rip it off.
Yeah. that was for a later show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's important to say that, like, you know, for at least, you know, for me, when I think that the working class and organizing the working class is central to the socialist movement, that's not meant to be either, it's not a moral sort of judgment that I think that the working class is inherently, you know, that the working class turns people into saints, or that being a member of a union turns you into, you know, Mother Teresa or something like that, but that it's a political consideration about how power is organized in the society, and it's a political judgment too about, you know, the position that people are in society based on how on an abstract model of how society is organized, and that you know there are conditions that to being working class, to the experience of going to work and having to work under someone else's control, having to go essentially into an autocratic relationship every single day for 8 or 10 or mm-hmm. however many hours you work, you know, not by choice, but because you have to in order to pay your rent, in order mm-hmm. to have access to health care if you're in America.
We go on the streets and we walk around, we can go into whatever shop we want to do and all that stuff. But how do we get the money to participate in society?
Yeah.
Out of these little tyrannies that we, under a boss.
Yeah, and that those and I suppose the the broad argument that socialists make when we talk about the central role of the working class is that experience of being a worker creates conditions through which people can be organized to fight for social democracy, for for a society where the products, the fruits of our collective labor as a class go to the benefit of the vast majority instead of the petty tyrants that, you know, own the way that things are produced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not easy, but at all. Of course, but it is, but any way of trying to go around the back of the working class to make things better is looking for a shortcut that I think ultimately doesn't deliver. Any major social movement of the 20th century, anywhere in the world, that succeeded in winning greater democratic rights, or a greater quality of life, for the vast majority of people, has always had the working class in one way or another at the center of it.
All right.
One other quick question. Mm-hmm. How was your Labor Day weekend?
Well, Orthodox Labor Day is on September 16th, as Bill will know.
What?
That was a joke.
Okay.
Wait, but what is Orthodox Labor Day?
I was joking about... Look at it.
Actually, it's May 1st, if you want to be
I know May Day.
Yeah. You know, that's the most orthodox of Labor Days.
That's true. Yeah.
All right, we're going to play a song. This is the wonderful Billy Bragg. Let me see if I got all the levels here going properly. Here we are. We can play it now.
Lessons of the past we'll learn, we'll learn. she's grown mad. Wars who has been the bossy's wiser. The Union forever defending our rights. Down with the blackleg, the workers unite. With our brothers and our sisters in many far off lands, there is power in a union. Now I long for the morning that I realize brutality and unjust laws cannot defeat us. But who'll defend the workers who cannot organize when the bosses send their lackeys out to cheat us? Money speaks for money, the devil for his own. Who comes to speak for the skin and the bone? What a comfort to the widow, a light to the child. There is power in a union.
We are back. And let's see. Let's see. I think that we should do some community announcements.
Okay.
All right. So, at least community announcements as far as the Democratic Socialists of America, the Capital District of the Democratic Socialists of America. So on this Saturday, September, and we're not telling you to do anything. We're just telling you it's out there. Okay. There will be a town hall in support of the Build Public Renewables Act, which is a law that says that we should get the New York Power Authority to deliver more renewable energy to meet our climate goals under the CLCPA on this Saturday, September 7th at 12:30 at the Howe Branch of the Albany Public Library at 105 Schuyler Street. That's in Albany. And tomorrow at 6 p.m., September 4th, there will be a legal committee meeting of the Hudson Common Council. Where people should be going there to support good cause eviction in Hudson, which is a way of keeping a little control away from the landlords and giving it back to ordinary tenants. I am going to do a little plug for our fellow comrade Patrick Robbins, who wrote in, I don't think it's going to be in the magazine, Jack, but it's on their website, the public-private partnerships hurt the clean energy transition. And that's an article that he wrote. It was when I saw it, was on the front page of the Jacobin website. And it's a nice little study.
It's great.
It's a nice little study of why the state should just do it and not have to rely on private businesses to make the transition to clean energy.
Which ties into the town hall on Saturday.
That's right. And also important, at 2 p.m. on Saturday, September 14th, at the Erie Canal Memorial Park, will be a protest at the Watervliet Army Arsenals, where they prepare munitions for use in the Gaza-Palestinian genocide. You are looking astonished, Aaron.
That just sounds like a great protest.
It sounds like a great protest. I didn't know. You think arsenals are like in the middle of a city. You think that those things happen in the desert somewhere, right? But this is in, right close to Albany, and it is the oldest continuously operating armory in the United States, in the Army.
Great. Good for us.
All right. Aaron, you suggested some songs today. Is there any particular songs that you would like to play?
Oh, man. Well, there...
I have them all on my desktop here, ready to go.
It's really tough. I'm a really big fan of Ask the Boss by Flowchart. It's a deep cut disco record that was a real favorite of a lot of the Detroit's early house and techno DJs.
It's an exactly 6 minute song, and that'll take us to
take us out. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. We're sorry for all the technical.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back on, Aaron, when we're not cut for time.
Mm-hmm.
See you next month.
Yep. Next month is October, Tuesday? So it's going to be spooky. It's going to be the month of October, so we're going to have a seance or something like that. All right. Here is Ask the Boss by Flowchart.
Bop, bop.